Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Dr. Carl is an Australian science communicator and a popularizer. Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well. Thank you, Dr. Howard.
Excellent. So we've just, a lot of our listeners are going to be fasting this evening for Yom Kippur. And we have a number of questions about fasting. Is it, because fasting's become a bit of a trend, hasn't it? It's become quite popular once again. Is it good for us? Is it bad for us? What does it actually do to our bodies?
There's no doubt that over the last several tens of thousands of years, we've evolved from hunter-gatherer societies where food security was always a little bit iffy. You might be able to get food, you might not. We've evolved into a situation where usually we're no more than a 3-minute walk or 2-minute walk from the refrigerator, and we can get food any time of day or night. And if you're on the road, surely it won't be more than an hour or two. And so we've ended up eating more food than we need. Now, there are people who claim that fasting is a good and natural way to go and that it has certain health benefits. Maybe yes, maybe no. There are some benefits with a degree of calorie restriction of not eating too much, but the full benefits are not that certain. Certainly, however, fasting can have a role in helping you provide the kick to get you from your weight that's too high down to something better. But it makes it hard when to try to keep it up as a lifelong habit where you don't eat on every Wednesday or Thursday or whatever. If suddenly somebody turns up or there's a religious festival and you want to have a meal with them, and having a meal is so much a part of our human society that to simply say, I'll just sit there and look at you while you eat, it's not the same vibe. So it definitely can be something to help you kick off a loss of weight if you've got too much, if you're carrying too much weight. But I have my doubts about it as a lifelong strategy.
The religious fast where you don't even drink water is something completely different. That obviously is not something that I would imagine is very good for us.
Well, that can be messy. If it happens and you're near the pole and it's in the middle of winter and so the time of fasting is, say, 6 hours, that's fine.
Right.
But suppose you're working in the middle of the summer and the day is 18 hours long and you are a person who has to work to earn your money. And if you are working in physical labor and you cannot eat or drink and it's a hot day, well, that can lead to trouble. So there needs to be a little bit of flexibility to account for extreme circumstances such as this.
All right. Interesting indeed. Can we talk about double cosmic cannibalism? That sounds very interesting.
Yes. It turns out that when you look at the night sky, that pretty well half or so of all the little dots of light you see are not just one star, but they're two stars orbiting around each other. So this is a story of a pair of stars, and they were of different sizes. The bigger they are, the quicker they go through their life cycle. And the bigger one went through its life cycle, and it was so big that when the nuclear fires went out, it still had enough mass left over that it shrank down into a black hole or a neutron star. Because in a star, you've got two forces determining the size of the star, the nuclear fires pushing out, the gravity pulling in. Let's go for it was a black hole because that's far more romantic. So they're orbiting around each other, and then there's a couple of different pathways, but the easy one is that the regular star that was left, and they're both orbiting around each other, their common center of gravity, the regular star started to get towards the end of its life. Its atmosphere began to expand so much that it encompassed the other star, the black hole. The black hole then began to slow down via various sorts of friction acting on the stuff that it was swallowing of the atmosphere, and end up over a period of about 4 centuries making its way in tighter and tighter circles until it got to the center, the core of the regular star, whereupon it started eating the core of the regular star, and via some fancy astrophysics, this led it into it exploding and throwing out enormous jets and behaving like what we call a type 2 supernova. So you've got a sort of a coupled cosmic cannibalism where a regular star eats a black hole, and in return, once it's been eaten, the black hole, even though it has zero size, eats the regular star, which then explodes. Oh my gosh, who would have thought the universe would be so crazy?
It's really incredible. Is it also true that when we look up at the stars, we walk outside at night, we look up at the stars, what we're seeing is most likely no longer there. We're looking back into histories of thousands and thousands of years ago.
Some of them won't be. So if you're looking just at the stars in our galaxy, and that's pretty well all you can see with a naked eye, the most distant ones would be, you can only see 1,000 dots, they wouldn't be further than about 50,000 light years away. And so they're probably still around. But then when you start looking at galaxies, and these galaxies are not tens of thousands of light years away, but millions or even billions, then there's a good chance that that galaxy has gone and the photons have been emitted like a cannon shell and they're still flying through space, but the thing that emitted them has just faded away to nothing.
It's just incredible to think about that, to see that that is what we're looking at might no longer be there. It almost gives us a sense of looking into history in a way.
We are looking into the past in the same way that if you're listening to somebody speak, you're hearing them just a fraction of a second behind when the actual words left their mouth, because sound travels at about 1 kilometer every 3 seconds. So if there's something happening 300 meters away, you can see it happening with your eyes almost instantaneously, and a whole second later, 1,000, 2,000, then the sound arrives at your ears, and you can definitely be aware of that time delay.
Staying on this subject, there's been a lot of almost slow release of information from the United States, primarily about unidentified objects and possible life on other planets and visitors to our planet. Are you seeing this as being a process to get us used to this concept, or is this something that just conspiracy theorists are jumping on?
The latter. So the conspiracy theories are just jumping on it. So what we've got is from the US military, what we have is not pictures of UFOs with their little tentacles in sharp focus waving at us, but rather what we have is reports of fuzzy, out of focus, poorly exposed blobs of light or images on a radar screen apparently doing things really quickly. And we have known about this for about 20 years. All this footage is really old. If you go to Brian Dunning's website called The Skeptoid, S-K-E-P-T-O-I-D, he deals with the history of how these people have, the episode's called UFOs, how these people have been releasing this information every couple of years over the last 20 years. And there's nothing new, it's just that they're hoping to attract a new audience who didn't hear it the last time a couple of years ago. I would love to believe in aliens, and I read science fiction so much, and I really want the aliens to come and visit me and take me for a tour through the galaxy after giving me a bottle of Geritol to drink so I don't get older, and traveling at close to the speed of light so I hardly age at all, and then after 10 seconds, having spent 1,000 years traveling through the galaxy, they drop me off at home together with all of tomorrow's lottery numbers.
Sounds perfect. It actually sounds absolutely ideal.
What's not to like? Love it.
What's not to like? I like that indeed. It is a 7:27. It is about to go 7:28. Dr. Carl, thank you as always.